Radio show. Oh, it's been a very busy weekend. It's been a busy day. So, let's get this show started. Annual income, 20 pounds. Annual expenditures, 19.6. Result, happiness. Annual income, 20 pounds. Annual expenditures, 20 pounds plus 6. Result, misery. David Copperfield. If you're not in a happy position of earning at least slightly more than you spend, what portion of your household budget comes from borrowing? Or perhaps selling the family jewels? Is it the seemingly modest 3% that spelled misery for Charles Dickens' character? Who wound up in debtor's prison? There was such a thing. If there were debtor's prison now, all of America would be there. Or is it even worse than that? Say a mind-boggling 43%. In percentage terms, that is the expected shortfall between U.S. government receipts and expenditures in the 2011 federal budget. Amazing, isn't it? According to revised numbers released last week, the Obama administration expects its annual income or revenues for fiscal 2011 to come in at $2.173 trillion versus annual expenditures of $3.818 trillion. Well, if I got my math correct, that leaves a deficit of $1.64 trillion. As a result, our government will have to borrow or find other ways to paper over 43 cents out of every dollar that it intends to spend. The Obama administration has more than tripled the national deficit since the last full year of the Bush administration, and in so doing, it has achieved a remarkable feat. It has made the gap between federal receipts and outlays even wider than it was at the height of World War II. U.S. spending during the war increased by a factor of 8, rising from $8.5 billion in 1940 to $76 billion in 1945. The huge increase in federal expenditures was necessary for many reasons. Among other things, it supported the 12 million men and women serving in the U.S. Armed Forces at the time, at the peak of the war. And it also supported a hundredfold increase in annual production of military airplanes, tanks, weapons, and that kind of thing. Uniforms. On the way to an annual production of more than 96,000 fighters, bombers, and transport aircraft as well. The rise in additional revenues during the war, in order to raise more income, additional income, during World War II, the government came up with the ingenious device of withholding tax on payroll checks. That's right. The federal tax system was born then. Federal tax receipts increased from $8.2 billion in 1940 to $41.5 billion in 1945. A fivefold increase. And that left an annual deficit in 1945 of $29.1 billion or 41% on total expenditures of $70.6 billion. You follow me here? And thus, during the greatest war in human history, the United States as an arsenal of democracy, supplying not just its own forces, but those of Britain and Russia, had a budget deficit that was just 2 percentage points below the gap that now looms for fiscal 2011. When a nation's at war, against a deadly enemy, most people accept the need for government to demand sacrifices on the part of its citizens. Through conscription, rationing, price controls, central direction of investment and production, and greatly increased taxation and public spending. Now, the only exception to the rule that a free society must not be subjected to a single purpose is war, and the other temporary disasters when subordination of almost everything to the immediate and pressing need is the price at which we preserve our freedom in the long run. Do the Obama budgets, the Obama budget, the excesses, do they live up to the test of being necessary to long-term national survival, or perhaps to the contrary? They imperil our future economic well-being. Federal spending will reach an estimated 25.3% of GDP in fiscal 2011, up almost 5 percentage points since 2008. And for what? Far from kickstarting the economy, the government's heavy reliance on deficit spending has only served to expand an already bloated public sector and to constrict the private sector. This, unfortunately, is the road to total domination, governmental domination, socialism. Well, I don't know. I wonder what the end game is here of this administration. Because President Obama established a bipartisan debt reduction commission and then ignored its findings completely. And these findings called for unpopular cuts in entitlement spending. His first two budgets led to the largest deficit in U.S. history. Then, ensuing $3 trillion in red ink, more than all other previous presidents combined. And that, in turn, prompted the Tea Party movement and led to the Democrats' largest midterm House defeat since 1938. So, where are we going here? I thought this guy was supposed to be a genius. He was supposed to be godlike, He was supposed to be the Messiah. Is he the Messiah, or is he something less than that? No matter what, Obama has proposed a budget with an even deficit. And that record federal borrowing prompted my guy and yours, Charles Krauthammer, Dr. Krauthammer, to describe it as Louis XIV's indulgence, an illusion to the wild royal spending that brought about the French Revolution. Even Newsweek's Evan Thomas, who once gushed and licked the boots of Obama, stating that Obama, quote, and I quote, stood above the world as some sort of God, end quote, an ass kisser, called the president's new budget a profile in cowardice. And those are quotes, too. I forgot to add those quotes, one at the beginning and end. Don't you hate it when somebody says, quote, unquote, blah, 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 blah? Then it's not a quote because you just, I mean, the quote's gone. You have to quote the quote, then say what you're going to say, then end the quote with a good quote. But it's just one of my pet peeves. So now, after Obama leaves office, Necktie can't come soon enough. A perfect storm of rising international interest rates and the anemic dollar will cause panic on the part of foreign lenders. And that may force an end, and we hope an end to this unhinged American rush to borrow and blow what it has not earned. So when President Obama says that, well, the federal budget, the federal government has to manage its budget just like everyone else, just like all of you poor folk out there, is he conning? Who's he kidding? Who's he crapping? Don't crap me, President Obama. Don't crap me. I'm not stupid. When you say, Mr. President, that the federal government needs to not spend more than it takes in and manage its own budget the way me, Clarence Jones, manages his budget, frankly, dude, either you're a moron or you're trying to con me. Because I don't manage my budget by spending more money than I take in. It just doesn't happen. Oh yeah, every once in a while I'll indulge myself. You know, a new laptop here, a new computer there. Hey, a few days ago, I took my car to the dealer for a 100,000-mile checkup. I drive a 2004 Nissan Maxima. I could get a new car, but I love the car. It's already paid for. It still rides good. You know, I almost never take that car to the dealer because they overcharge you astronomically. And in fact, I knew this was going to be the case when I took the car to the dealer. So I took the car to the dealer for the checkup, got the brakes done, transmission checked out, and a tune-up. Wound up costing me nearly $1,000 for those three things. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But you know what? I knew that was going to happen. It's the 100,000-mile mark. I haven't taken that car to the dealer since I bought it from the dealer. So I thought I would just treat the car to a nice, fine 100,000-mile checkup. It won't be going back to the dealer till 200,000-mile mark. I'll be taking it down to a Japanese auto or someplace like that to get my car repaired. For now, but I just thought I'd do that. I splurged a little bit for the car because it's been a good, loyal car, good, loyal transportation. But other than that, I don't spend more money than comes in, and I save. Well, if Mr. Obama believes that it's important for the government to do the same thing, then why is he talking out of both sides of his mouth? I tell you, folks, this guy is a con artist. He is so full of crap that it's not funny. It's not funny anymore. Newt Gingrich suggested a constitutional crisis. I just think now, after all this time, after all this kidding around about this guy, after all this talk about him being brilliant or even stupid, I just think he's incompetent. He has no idea what he's doing. I no longer believe that there's a method to his madness. I no longer believe that President Obama is some brilliant politician, some genius. I don't see the evidence here. Either he is completely and utterly incompetent to do this job, or he's a genius, and I don't see the genius part here. Now, gas prices in many parts of the country are nearing $4 a gallon, yet the media is not saying anything about this. They're not attributing these high gas prices to the Obama administration. When gas prices got up nearly this high under the Bush administration, it was all blamed on President Bush. Every single extra penny when gas prices rose was attributed to President Bush and his mismanagement. But yet I hear nothing about pertaining to how President Obama has affected these gas prices, how his administration is tied one way or the other. Not even a suggestion. And $4 a gallon, it could get even worse. As unrest spreads in the oil exporting Middle East, as we've been seeing every single day, the Obama administration seems to see no crisis whatsoever. It has curtailed leases for offshore oil exploration for 7 years and exempted thousands of acres in the West from drilling. And it won't reconsider opening up small areas of Alaska with large oil reserves. Here, I find his methods to be curious, because we all know that President Obama and the Democrats and liberals throughout are pushing this green economy, green, 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 electric cars, high-speed rail, and the like. Could it be that perhaps Obama is just not as dumb as I think he is? I would really like to, you know what, I'd really like to have a frank discussion with that guy after he's out of office to find out what the hell were you thinking. Because here's what I think. I think that all the turmoil that's going on in the Middle East and the resulting high fuel prices, some say it'll be up to $5 a gallon before Labor Day, before Memorial Day, I mean, and Obama's unwillingness to extend the oil leases and promote drilling is all part of a plan to wean Americans off oil and push us toward this green crap. Yeah, he is the smartest man in the room. As long as the room is empty, Tesla, as long as he's the only one in the room with a couple of roaches and a mouse and some flies that seem to find him wherever he is. Is there something going on with him and the flies and the rodents? I mean, over the course of the last 2 years, the flies and rodents have been following him around everywhere he goes. What does that mean? He is the smartest man in the room. Only if the room is empty and he's the only one in it. But I think in this case, perhaps there's something to it. Perhaps even Obama has stumbled onto something that's disdainfully brilliant. Cause the gas prices to necessarily skyrocket, and then Americans will use less fuel, drive less, ride bicycles, take high-speed rail, ride Amtrak, or, pray tell, buy electric cars in droves. So perhaps there's a method to all of this. And along with the administration pushing still cap and trade through legislation, interesting. In times of unusually cold winters like we just had, the planet is warming up accordingly. The administration would like to use, or they'd like to tax us even more. The already high price of fossil fuels, well, he'd like to tax them even further. So perhaps there is a reason. Green, the new color of socialism, Tesla wrote in the chat room. Reminds me of carbs. Remember a couple of years ago when carbs were all the rage, where it was the end thing not to chow down on anything that had too many carbs in it? Carbs jumped the shark for me, that whole carbs craze, when I was driving along in Des Plaines, Illinois, and I passed by a family-owned, or what appeared to be a family-owned auto repair garage, because it wasn't a brand-name place. I looked up at the sign that announced the name of the car repair place, and underneath the sign was a very interesting lettering. It said, "Our oil has no carbs." For me, that was the day that carbs jumped the shark. When are we going to be done with this green crap? Going green. Paper or plastic? I'm asking for plastic every single time. Exactly right, Tesla. Tesla wrote, "The high price of gasoline fits in the socialist plan of causing folks to alter their lifestyle to get adjusted to alternative fuels and to get adjusted to having less." Well, yeah, exactly. And I couldn't agree more, Tesla. But it doesn't really work that way. It's not going to work that way. It's not. Obama is an idiot, but like most idiots, everyone in a while, they stumble on a good idea or what they believe is a good idea. And I believe that Obama is steering us in that direction, Tesla. But it probably isn't his idea. Now, moving on, Obamacare. Well, that was pushed through the Senate in 2009 through backroom deal-making and special perks for fence-sitting senators. We all know that. The promise was that it would save both patients and the nation billions of dollars. But updated estimates now suggest that the takeover of healthcare will cost the country about $2 trillion over the next decade, while disrupting and making more costly existing health plans. That worry may explain why the administration has quietly granted more than 1,000 waivers from its own affordable plan to some, 900 organizations covering 2 million workers, 40% of them union members. Long after Obama has left office, everyone else who isn't so privileged to be exempted will have to live with the consequences of a cumbersome and costly federal health bureaucracy. The president just weighed in on the Wisconsin budget deadlock and suggested that Governor Scott Walker was out to, quote, punish public sector unions more than to figure out a way to close a $3 billion state deficit. What happens when the money runs out? Where will the unions get their money then? What happens when Governor Walker will have to issue or let people off or fire people? Because that's what's going to have to happen. So while the unions are out in droves, protesting and causing disruptions all over the country, well, if I were a governor, and some folks should be damn glad that I'm not, I would just fire them all, just like Ronald Reagan did with the air traffic controllers so many years ago. Just fire them all. And then hire non-union workers, and then let those union folks go out and strike and pace back and forth jobless. I wonder if Governor Walker and other governors have the power to simply fire them all. Exactly, Tesla. Tesla writes, a reason Obama halted the space program is so that the Americans will not receive its benefits, i.e. microwave ovens, microwave technologies, and even Tang. Yes, Tang. I remember that as a kid. I had a lot of that. Exactly. Because improving America's lifestyle, as Tesla writes that Obama does not want to do, well, that causes us to be less dependent on the government. So, unlike the government, unlike the federal government, Governor Walker can't print money. And he can't so easily raise taxes without losing residents who might flee to lower tax states, although there aren't many surrounding Wisconsin. That Obama wants unions to know he's on their side is very clear. That he cares how Wisconsinites are going to pay for sky-high public employee wages, benefits, and health care, well, that's not so clear. In these very lean times of nearly 10% unemployment and rapid hikes in gas and food prices, the President of the United States of America has chastised, quote, fat cat Wall Street bankers, the wealthy who jet to Super Bowls, those who jump to Las Vegas, and in general suggested that strapped American families might wish to sacrifice and put off a vacation, while his family vacations lavishly in the open, mostly on taxpayer dime. But in let them eat cake style, the president and his family seem disturbingly tone deaf to the potential symbolism of postponing its own exclusive vacations. Michelle Obama just returned from skiing at an elite Vail, Colorado resort last summer. In Maria Antoinette fashion, she jetted to Costa del Sol in Spain for a costly Mediterranean vacation, most of which was paid for by, yes, taxpayers like you and me. After Obama leaves office, and that time cannot come soon enough, We're all going to have to eat cake. Then a less eloquent president will have to balance budgets, pay off trillions in debt, to develop more energy, come up with a sane healthcare policy, and in symbolic fashion, have the first family share the sacrifices of a more mundane lifestyle. One cannot wait for that time to come. Time is running out. Time is running out. Obama is running up crushing federal debt at a level in American history. Trillions upon trillions of dollars in debt. This ensures the future will bring ruinous taxes, runaway inflation, and eventual financial collapse. While all this is going on, he is being praised. And by the left-wing media. There do tyrants fear America anymore? An article in the Telegraph suggests not. President Obama's timid foreign policy is an embarrassment for a global superpower, the Telegraph. Niall Gardner writes. The debacle of Washington's handling of the Libyan issue is symbolic of a wider problem at the heart of the Obama administration's foreign policy. The fact that it took 10 days and at least 1,000 dead on the streets of Libya's cities before President Obama finally mustered up the courage, crawled from underneath his bed, got 3 a.m. call, and put the call on the answering machine while he rolled over and snuggled with that hideous woman he calls his wife. The fact that he couldn't muster up the courage to call for Muammar Mad Dog Gaddafi to step down is highly embarrassing for the world's only superpower and emblematic of a deer-in-the-headlight approach to world leadership. But why is that the case? Because Obama was a junior state senator. He was a junior senator. And now he is a very junior president. He has no idea what he's doing. He has surrounded himself with people who don't know what they're doing. These idealistic people that he surrounds himself who are basically hippies tiptoeing to the tulips. Didn't we learn our lesson with Carter? I mean, President Carter was once viewed as being brilliant also. A graduate of my alma mater, the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis, a nuclear engineer on some of the first nuclear subs in the United States Navy. A brilliant man. Truly a brilliant man. Very bright. A pioneer in nuclear submarine warfare technology. But not a very good president. Not at all. Not a leader. Not a leader of men. Not a leader of government. Not a leader of this great country. A disastrous president. So even if in some circles, Obama is considered brilliant. Doesn't make him a good leader. Doesn't make him a very good president, as we can see. Washington seems, and Obama seems, incapable of decisive decision-making on foreign policy and anything else. It's a far cry from the days when it swept entire regimes from power and defeated America's enemies with deep-seated conviction and unshakable drive to victory, a la Ronald Wilson Reagan. Where have you gone, President Reagan? Just a few years ago, the United States was genuinely feared on the world stage, and dictatorial regimes, strategic adversaries, and state sponsors of terror, well, they trod very carefully in the face of the world's most powerful nation. Now, Washington, and certainly President Obama, appears weak, rudderless, and frequently confused. From Tehran to Tripoli, the Obama administration has been pathetically slow to lead and afraid to condemn acts of state-sponsored repression and violence. Now, I hear today that some liberals are saying that, well, Obama wanted to wait until the Americans who were in the area were evacuated and out of danger before he condemned Gaddafi. How pathetic. We have already put Gaddafi in his place in 1986 when we delivered some of our finest military arsenal his way and calmed his butt down. If Ronald Reagan were alive today and president of the United States, I suspect that Gaddafi wouldn't touch a hair on the American's head, even if he were standing right in front of him. And Reagan could have called him out as the mad dog, terrorist, insane, comical idiot that Gaddafi is, and dare him to lay a head on an American's head. But not this guy. Not Barry Obama. When protesters took to the streets to demonstrate against the Islamic dictatorship in Iran in 2009, the brutal repression that greeted them was hardly a blip on Barack Obama's teleprompter screen, barely meriting a response from a largely silent president. Perhaps he was on vacation that week. In contrast to Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush, President Obama fails to see the United States as an exceptional nation, which is a part of the problem here. An exceptional nation with a unique role in leading the free world and standing up to tyranny. In most of Obama's speeches abroad, he has frequently found fault with his own country. How embarrassing has this guy been? Bowing and scraping. Rather than projecting confidence in American greatness, knowing that we are being depended upon as a beacon of hope and safety and security for many countries around the world, from Cairo to Strasbourg, he has adopted an apologetic tone rather than demonstrating faith in America as a, dare I say it, a shining city upon a hill, a beacon of freedom and liberty. Obama is a president who lacks pride in his own nation's historic role as a great liberator. And for this reason, he cannot project strength anywhere in the world. This is the guy you guys voted for. Some of you folks, a candy ass, who by his own weakness has put this great country in danger all over the globe Who fears us? What's to stop any nation from simply invading America, knowing full well, or suspecting rather, that Obama will do nothing? What is to stop nations who mean our friends ill from starting wars and fights and violence and mayhem all across the globe? There's no fear of American reprisal. There's no fear that Obama will even subject him to harsh language. It's also become abundantly clear that the Obama team, they attach little importance to human rights issues. Isn't that odd? And in contrast to the previous administration, well, the Obama administration has not pursued a freedom agenda in the Middle East or anywhere else. It places far greater value even with hostile regimes, bowing and scraping and butt-kissing. Even while these nations carry out gross human rights abuses. Well, America's response is to point out its own human rights abuses, such as not allowing illegal aliens to roam about freely, killing and murdering innocent citizens in places like Arizona and elsewhere. Bad, bad USA for not allowing illegal immigrants to cross our borders and mooch without contributing one good thing in most cases, in a lot of cases. In the mistaken belief that appeasement enhances security, a la Neville Chamberlain. Remember him? What a candy ass, quite resembling President Obama in many ways. Appeasement. Like us, love us. Don't worry about us. We won't do anything bad. We won't bother you. Do what you want. Be what you want. It's all good. This has been the case with Iran, Russia, and North Korea, to name just a few. This administration has also been all too willing to sacrifice U.S. leadership in deference to supranational institutions such as the United Nations, whose track record in standing up to dictatorships has been virtually non-existent, much like the Obama administration. The White House, well, they're painful, painful navel-gazing on Libya last week, with even the French adopting a far tougher stand. The French. When did you ever think, I mean, I'm only 49 years old, but did you ever think that a Frenchman, the French, would be tougher than the United States of America? That a French leader would be tougher than the President of the United States? That the French would be tough about anything other than escargot and high fashion and bread? This is cause for great concern. Everything about this administration is cause for grave concern. The Obama administration's very timid, candy-ass approach to foreign policy is the very last thing the world needs at a time of mounting turmoil in the Middle East, including the growing threat of nuclear-armed Iran and Islamist militants
on the rise from Egypt to Yemen. U.S. leadership is now needed more than ever, but I'm afraid we won't have it. It's gone. And what an embarrassment. Just like everything else about this administration. A complete and total embarrassment. Ronald Reagan, where have you gone? Is there anyone on the horizon who can bring us out of this lethargy? Now, according to Hillary Clinton, the safety and well-being of Americans has to be our highest priority. Oh my God, that comment proffered by our Secretary of State is overshadowed by the serious jeopardy U.S. citizens now encounter thanks to the ideological blindness and national security incompetence of the Obama administration. I said it, incompetence. Mr. Genius, Mr. World, Mr. All Citizen of the World, Obama. Super genius. Baby Jesus Obama, incompetent. Since 2011 began, more than 20 Americans have been injured, killed, or gone missing in the midst of violence in Lebanon, Tunisia, Iran, Egypt, Yemen, Bahrain, Libya, Mexico, and the Indian Ocean. American citizens are being held by government authorities in Iran, Yemen, and Pakistan. Obama does nothing. Oh, he goes on vacation. Talks about the need for me to sacrifice my upcoming vacation. Going on a cruise. April 13th, 10 days. Maybe I should put that off. Maybe I can't afford it. Because I'm going to have to give all my jack to Obama, to the Obama administration. Once he finds out I've got some money, a little money left over, a little money saved, he's going to want to take that, so I got to go ahead and spend it while I can. But getting back to the subject matter at hand. Our State Department says it is concerned. Well, thanks. Last week, two U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents were ambushed in Mexico and killed. Special Agent Jamie Zapata was killed. And his partner was grievously wounded. Mexican authorities now claim that they have apprehended some of the perpetrators with, quote, connections, end quote, to one or more drug cartels. Now the Obama administration, with its history of slow-rolling counter-narcotics assistance to Mexico and doing next to nothing to protect our borders, is confronted now by news that a Saudi national has been apprehended in Texas with plans to attack sensitive U.S. infrastructure. And my main man, W. And then last week, four Americans abroad say they were on board a sailing vessel. The sailing vessel Quest, I believe, were seized by Somali pirates in the Indian Ocean. And a U.S. warship was ordered to the scene as the terrorist headed for safe haven in Somalia. If past is prologue, it should have ended like previously armed rescue operations conducted by U.S. Navy SEALs and United States Marines. Hoorah! South Korea Navy commandos and even Russian and French special operations units with safe recovery of near all hostages. But no, in this case, our ships were implicitly or inexplicably ordered to simply tail the captured yacht while an FBI hostage negotiator, you heard me, conducted a parley with the pirates. A parley. I can't stand that word. parlay this. During the negotiation, all four hostages were killed. The Obama administration now says it's bringing the 15 captured pirates to the U.S. to face justice.
Mm-hmm.
In a U.S. courtroom, count on a circus maximum, resulting in more of the catch and release program for terrorists. How embarrassing. That is the word of the week. Embarrassing. In Pakistan, Raymond Allen Davis, an officially credentialed American with diplomatic immunity, is being held on murder charges at a notorious and often deadly detention facility. Unnamed U.S. officials are widely quoted in international media claiming Davis is a CIA officer, a CIA employee, or a CIA contractor. This guy is an embarrassment, I'm telling you right now. My goodness. Are you kidding? Oh, man. Okay. I don't know what to say. I don't know. On Wednesday afternoon, after more than a week of violent protest and brutal suppression by Libyan despot and mad dog Muammar Gaddafi, Obama finally broke his silence. Finally. Maybe he's out on the golf course. He couldn't break away, or he has scheduling conflict. He broke his silence on Muammar and the bloodshed, and declared it to be outrageous and unacceptable. Ooh, that's harsh language. Harsh language. I got to cover my ears. Harsh language. Obama declared the violence and mayhem and death and destruction to be outrageous and unacceptable. Okay. He also said his crack national security team is exploring, quote, the full range of options that we have to respond to this crisis. Who had any faith in that? Unfortunately, his options probably will result in more ineptness. Very limited options. For the first time in more than three decades, Iranian warships are steaming to Syria. And we have no U.S. carrier battle group in the Med. Instead of sending a U.S. carrier to the coast of Libya to prevent members of the Libyan Air Force from bombing their countrymen, our commander-in-chief has dispatched Secretary of State Clinton, scary as she is, to Geneva to confer with the absurdly impotent anti-American United Nations Human Rights Council. Oh, they'll lunch. We'll have a nice spread out for. And they'll sit and talk for a while people are being murdered in the streets of Tripoli. Perhaps Obama was too busy sending activists to protest in Wisconsin and ordering his Justice Department to cease defending the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act, to have noticed that Gaddafi's Libyan Arab Jim Rasha is a member of the United Nations Human Rights Commission. The Obama administration's flaccid and inept response to all of these crises is what? What's the word? Embarrassing. This is what we get when we elect for the second time in 40 years, Jimmy Carter. Did we expect anything less? We've got Jimmy Carter all over again, except worse. Now, we knew that Jimmy Carter, as a young naval officer, was intelligent and quite brilliant, at least in terms of the capacity to, well, for being a nuclear engineer, which is what he was. At least we knew that as a young man he was intelligent. Barack Obama, well, we're being convinced that he is without any evidence or proof. Embarrassing. That is the word of the week. It's the word for the next 2 years, because I suspect that there is more embarrassment to come with this president. Okay. I got to get out of here. I want to thank you for listening. Thanks for downloading the show. Thanks for paying attention. I really do appreciate it. Thanks, Tesla. And I hope everyone has a good night. Everybody who downloads the show or comes to what's the blog talk and listens and gets the show off iTunes and all that. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much. Y'all have a wonderful evening. And we'll talk again tomorrow. Find out what more craziness is going on. What more silliness, what more inept behavior we have from our president. 2012 can't come soon enough. Damn. I'm not listening. I'm not listening.